Mrajuhtuden.
Mrajuhtuden.
Sober as sober. Sober. Sober as
welcome to the Anonymous Eskimo Project, a program devoted to bringing hope to those struggling with mental health issues and addiction. Through candid conversations with guests about mental health issues, addiction, and sobriety, we can let those who are struggling know that they are not alone. I am your host, Ralph Sara. Okay, on today's show, I have Hopi, Shoshone, and Mexican rapper, songwriter, actor, cancer survivor, and advocate, Jimmy Gomez, who is better known as a founding member of the Black Eyed Peas, and his stage name, Tabu Nawasha.
Yes, sir. What's up, Ralph? How you doing? And to all the listeners, it's an honor. I am actually in Washington, D.C. I was in New York yesterday for the Indigenous Peoples Day celebration with all my relatives and all the amazing allies that came to support. I actually met your friend from New Zealand who connected me with, with just the idea of wanting to champion the company that you, I believe it's a t-shirt company that had the words strong, sober, and Indigenous. And I was moved by that because, you know, I'm always trying to support companies that embrace the idea of sobriety. And that's something that's very important to me.
Yeah, definitely. Now, you've been sober for 16 years.
Yes, sir.
Can you go ahead and like tell everybody what your life looked like before you got sober and why you decided to get sober?
Yeah, so, I have addiction within my family. My dad was an alcoholic. My uncle was a drug addict. My stepfather was an alcoholic. And so alcoholism and drug abuse ran in my family really deep growing up. So I was around it. I saw it. So naturally, it was not a taboo, no pun intended, but pun intended. It wasn't a taboo in my lifestyle because it was at my household. It was around at parties. And, you know, of course, a lot of our tribal communities, we deal with alcoholism and substance abuse and depression and all these different demons that we battle. And as I started to really tap into my professional life as a performer, as an entertainer, it started becoming excessive partying, which in turn became an addiction to the lifestyle. The obsession of drinking became part of not only a social conversation, it became a daily conversation, which was a very dark one because, you know, you're on the go, you're performing, everybody's having fun, drinks are being passed around. At the same time, drinks are being passed around, joints are being passed around. At the same time, there's other substances that are being passed around. So, you know, I was a young man that got caught up. And I speak very candidly about it because if I could motivate and inspire people, especially in our tribal communities and allies in different communities, then that's my job, man. That's my responsibility because I feel like not only do I create music, not only do I write books, not only am I an entertainer, I'm also a champion of sobriety and sober living because I know that my fame, although I worked my ass off for it, my fame and the status and money and all that stuff has to be secondary to the living, to the idea of life, the idea of clarity. And in 2007, I fell really hard because I was going 100 miles per hour, you know, substance abuse, alcoholism. And in 2007, I crashed into somebody on the freeway at 7 or 8 in the morning. And that was my moment. I went to the local jail. I was in there for 8 hours. And it just, you know, I did a lot of soul searching for those 8 hours. Mm-hmm. And then I came home. I came home and that was it, man. I called my team. I said, guys, I have a problem. I need help. So I didn't go into recovery. I went into this situation called ProMeta, which takes urges and cravings away. It was like a treatment, like a 3-day treatment of going in, getting replenished the brain cells that I had killed, and basically it's a treatment that allowed me to have a natural healing from withdrawals or feeling like, you know, I was getting sick or any of that stuff, because I was dependent on the drugs and the alcohol. And as you know, a lot of people, it's hard for folks to kick it without getting sick, you know. And I speak very highly about where I'm at now because I was able to overcome that. Mm-hmm. But I'm also empathetic about those folks that don't have the ability to do ProMeta or to go into a facility and get well. So, you know, I just when I see people that need healing, I just try to spread as much positivity and optimism and love, because we lead with love, especially when you're in this state where you want to give back and inspire people.
Yeah. And I heard that in a previous interview, you said you lead with love, and you can apply that to like all parts of life, but I'm interested in the area of like sobriety and recovery. There's a stigma that's attached to where people look down at others that are in recovery or struggling and look down upon them. I'm interested in how you lead with love in like recovery and with people struggling.
Well, we all are imperfect humans. We don't, you know, we don't all have the same frequencies that, you know, we all share one thing, and that's you're born and you die, right? And along that journey, you try to figure out how you can become a better version of yourself. Yes, you're going to have mistakes. Yes, there's going to be landmines. Yes, you're going to have, you know, imperfect days and moments where you're feeling at your lowest. But what I try to do is I try to use my testimony very candidly, very open, very shooting from the hip, not trying to cover up anything, not sugarcoating anything, because a lot of times people think I live this glamorous lifestyle. I don't, because I still deal with the demons of the past, you know, whether it's thinking about certain time periods, videos that I see online, I'm like, man, I was so intoxicated in that video. Or, man, I look at old pictures of when I used to have long hair and I was like 110 pounds because I was using and abusing. And I'm like, wow, that's a dark time period. So it still haunts me. It's still like part of my history. But I've come so far to be able to use that history to be able to say, look, this was me at one point. I've come this far because of resilience, because of will, because of love, because of loving myself and wanting to make sure that I always learn from my mistakes of the past so that I can at least try to become a better version of myself, because I have kids, man. I want to inspire my kids. And yes, they're going to walk the experimenting path because they're getting older. My son's in high school. I talk to him about my situation as bluntly as possible because he is a teenager. He understands it. We don't need to sugarcoat anything. We just be as transparent as possible. But at the end of the day, it's something that I've really learned how to process and how to be, once again, empathetic about those that may not have the same mindset that I have. But I feel like because I've come so far, and because I do have this platform that speaks to millions of people because of the music thing, but yet I've surrendered my ego and I've surrendered the old me to become the new me that will inspire and motivate, I feel like, you know, people are more keen to listening to that part of my life, because it's like, oh, you're human just like us. Yes, I'm human just like everybody else. Yes, I bleed. Yes, I make mistakes. Yes, I fall. But it's like, how do I dust myself off to be able to become the person that I am today? And that's a long answer to your question, because I like to be as detailed and as give you as much to work with so that people can see that I, you know, I'm still learning, man. I'm a student of the game. I'm a student of life. I'm a student that wants to continue improving his skills and be a better version.
Man, that's so powerful. That is power right there.
Thank you.
You are a cancer survivor.
Yes, sir.
You said that that was your ultimate battle, that it was something that you could not control. And you had moments where you wanted to give up. But then you said you entered your warrior spirit mode. Can you tell us more about your warrior spirit mode?
Yes, sir. So the first time I unlocked that part of me was battling addiction, because there was a dark demon that had kept illuminating, and it was an ancient demon that I think, you know, took over my dad's life and was taking over my uncle's life, my first uncle, my mom's brother. And it was part of our world, you know, whatever that demon, that dark force that was the addiction, the illuminating presence in a substance form, was really trying to take me under. And, you know, I hate to use it as a metaphor, but that's the only way that I can explain it. It was trying to take all the light, all the strength that our ancestors have given us through resilience, through overcoming traumas, dealing with traumas, coping with traumas. And I felt like a lot of times I would look in that mirror and I would say, okay, one more, this is my last time. And I would end up doing it again the next day. And the demon would smile back at me. And it was a dark, dark, dark time period. And when I battled that demon and won and became sober, that was the first time my warrior spirit kicked in. And it was an ancient warrior spirit that said, we fought at the Battle of Little Bighorn. We fought many, many different battles amongst different tribes and colonizers. And for some reason, I felt like this is my first battle and I'm going to win this. And so that was the first time the warrior spirit came into play. After that, I was like, man, I'm good. I'm good. I'm sober. There's nothing that's going to bring me down. I'm on a high. And then guess what? I get hit with something as dark as cancer in 2014. Mm-hmm. So then I'm going to die. I'm not going to be here for my wife and my kids. I'm not going to be able to perform ever again. I'm going into all these crazy stories, creating crazy stories in my mind. I do chemotherapy. It's like war torture and a nightmare all in one happening inside my body. You got to kill everything that's good in your body to kill that one tumor that's bad, right? Mm. So there was moments where I was like, I'm not going to go into chemotherapy sessions anymore. And my wife was the kind of like the rock that kept me motivated. She kept me inspired. And she said, we need you. We cannot give up. You cannot allow this cancer to take over you. So offsetting that with holistic healing and trying to find unorthodox methods of healing my mind and my body, I went into warrior spirit. And that was because I had visions of my grandmother saying, keep your hands in the soil, stay connected to Mother Earth. And that was just her. I mean, she was so proud of her ancestry and our roots as a native woman from Jerome, Arizona, that's what I kept seeing when I was doing chemotherapy. I kept seeing these visions. Fortunately, I won that battle. September 4th, 2014 was my last chemo run, and I went into remission, and now I've been, you know, cancer-free since 2014, September of 2014. And I could honestly say that was the ultimate fight. That was the ultimate warrior coming into warrior mode, and it allowed me to tap into reconnected with my native roots, because after that, I needed a healing. I needed a calling, and that calling led me to Standing Rock. And when I went to Standing Rock, I stood in solidarity with a lot of native tribal communities, a lot of indigenous people from around the world, a lot of allies that came to be of service and stand in solidarity with the Standing Rock Sioux tribe and the water protectors. I spoke to elders at the drum circle and at the sacred fire. I went to the Osheti camp, and I really found my purpose. I found what I was supposed to do beyond just be a Black IP. I found my voice as an indigenous man to be able to put my best foot forward as a voice, as a beacon of light and inspiration to tribal communities and to be the best version of myself to inspire the next seven generations.
Wow, man. Man, so inspiring. And you know that warrior spirit you talk about, it can be applied to people who are struggling with alcohol or addiction as well, either drugs or alcohol. You know, people like me, I had over 3 years of sobriety and then I fell. And there were times where I just wanted to give up. And, you know, the shame and the stigma that was just, it just weighed me down, you know. But yeah. But listening to you say this, you know, get the warrior spirit, it gives me a renewed sense of fight, you know, like correct. I'm down. Like if you fall, you get back up, you dust yourself yeah. off, you don't give up. And, you know, you're not alone in this.
No, you're not. You're not. And yeah. and honestly, man, I'm going to tell you this. I would never, ever, and people say, don't ever say never. I'm saying never go back to the guy that I used to be that was using and abusing, bro. Like, now I'm going to keep it 100 with you. That version of me is so disgustingly dark and so pathetic because the way that I've become this voice, this strength, this conduit of hope, I wasn't that when I was using and abusing, bro. Like, I wasn't proud. My grandmother would not be proud of that version. I was diminishing the light that is our ancestry, that is our people, that is our community, that is the legend of how we were able to be resilient people and how we led with community and love. That wasn't me. That was the drugs and the alcohol back in the day. So I would never want to ever fall victim to that idea. Because I love myself, bro. And a lot of people don't say they love themselves. A lot of people have pride and are scared to love to openly love themselves and care about their well-being because they're so caught up in what people are going to think. At the end of the day, bro, like we only have one life. Creator gave us one life. So if you diminish that life and you allow these distractions and dark forces just because you like that high or that because you're feeling something and you want to go into this curling up like a ball. Nah, bro, we're too strong. Our ancestors have fought too hard. They put it down for us. So for us to allow substances and alcohol and distractions to be a way out.
Mm. Yeah.
Seriously. Yeah. And I'm being honest, man. A lot of yep. kids need to hear this.
Yeah.
Cause it's BS when I think about people that relapse. It's bad. It's dumb. It's not cool. I'm not for it because if I've come 16 years, I know that you can do the same thing. We're all people of vulnerability. We all have vices that we cater to. Like when I stopped using and abusing, one of the vices that I got into was green tea. Like I started drinking a lot of tea. I don't know why I got into green tea, but for some reason that became my vice. So on a daily basis, I was always drinking green tea. Mm. And it's not the best thing to do because there's a lot of caffeine, but I gave up drinking and I gave up substance abuse. And then I picked up this other thing because I am I do have an addictive personality, but it's like trying to figure out how to have moderation because the existent gene of addiction is still there, bro. So I'm like, when I move away from something, then I pick up something else. So that's why I started getting into like back into training and working out and dancing and writing and creating because that love and that appreciation for expressing myself, I'd rather be addicted to that and going to the gym and feeling great and putting my health and wellness before anything else than to be caught up in like I'm in a hotel room, you know, using drinking by myself, not even going out to a spot and socially drinking. Now it's like I'm doing it by myself. That's who I used to be, bro. I used to be that one, you know, the lonely guy that was all inebriated because I was scared what people would think.
Yeah, yeah. When you're going through that, people don't always talk about the like the mental health part of struggling or recovery even. They seem to skip that part of it. When you were fighting cancer, you mentioned that as well. People don't talk about the mental health aspect of
it. Yes, sir. Yeah, man. Like there's the physical sense, you know, because you feel it in your body. You get drained, fatigue, chemo brain, But the reality is coping with the trauma of, is he going to hit me again? Am I going to get cancer again? You start playing all these head games. You start feeling like you're not yourself anymore because you have, you lost your hair, you lost your eyebrows, you have that yellow skin from the chemotherapy. You're nauseated. You don't want to eat because of the metallic taste from the chemo. So you create this whole scenario of trauma that you experience, and you start like having mental lapses and mental breakdowns. And, you know, a lot of people don't know how to cope with it. So for me, it was like trying to find unconventional ways to cope with the mental aspect. And whether it was writing a song like The Fight that I wrote, and it was part of like my therapy. It helped me heal. But then when I watch something on TV and it reminds me of the IV and the chemo going in my bloodstream, or I smell a smell, it triggers. There's triggers. Just like when you're in recovery, there's triggers of addiction. But same thing goes for when you're a cancer survivor. You start seeing things. You see another person says something about their experience, and it reminds you, it takes you back to when you were dealing with your trauma and your sessions of chemo, and it always brings you back. I've had to grow from that time period because now I have a totally different perspective about life and listening to my body, making sure I put health before wealth, making sure I put my wellness before any career or job, making sure that my family's straight before anything, because at the end of the day, the biggest fear for me was not being able to take care of my wife and my kids and be there to see my kids grow into high school, graduate, and go into adult life, because I always kept thinking, am I going to be able to beat this? Am I going to survive this?
I speak about like being ashamed of being Native when I was young, you know, feeding into that stigma that Natives are dumb, dirty, and drunk. And it took me a while to get past that identity. You wrote a children's book called A Kid's Book About Identity.
Yeah.
Can you tell us how you're empowering our youth, you know, being proud of our heritage and celebrating our culture?
Yeah, man, growing up in L.A., my only direct connection to my ancestry was my grandmother. She's a proud woman, a Native woman from Jerome, Arizona. She always talked about Jerome. She never claimed Los Angeles. So growing up, I grew up in a Mexican community, but I didn't speak Spanish correctly. I spoke the way that a lot of kids in East LA speak, which is broken. We don't have a direct connection to Mexico or our ancestry in Mexico. So I was living in many worlds. I was in born in the United States, had a Native grandmother who never claimed LA, and I was an LA kid. I was also had roots from my Mexican side, Sonora, which I never went to as a kid. I never had been to Mexico or Sonora, Mexico. And so I didn't identify with anything. I was just kind of like lost for a long time, bro. Like, I didn't know. I wasn't Native enough because I wasn't from the res. And I didn't speak the language. I didn't know how much, you know, to really connect with on that side. And I wasn't, you know, 100% understanding my Mexican culture because I didn't grow up in Mexico. I didn't have a direct link to that. So then I started really understanding, doing research on my past, wanting to educate myself, learning about colonization, both in the United States and in Mexico, and Mexico and Arizona and Mexico being one at one time when it was territories, and knowing that I can celebrate and honor the beauty that is our indigenous foundation prior to colonization. I'm from the Mexican side and from my Native Shoshone Hopi side. So as I grew older, I said, you know what? I want to empower more kids that are biracial, that live in both worlds. So let me make a book about identity, not just about race, color, creed. Let's talk about gender. Let's talk about faith. Let's talk about demographic, environment, all these different things that make up your identity. I was a hip hop kid that loved hip hop culture, but, you know, I also was proud of learning to be the inspiration to Indian country and be like one of the dopest b-boys that was breakdancing and battling other crews and wanting to represent for like, yo, that native Mexican kid from East LA is dope. He's a breakdancer, he's an MC, but he always remembers where he comes from and he's learning to educate himself to become a better example, to lead by example. And unfortunately, you know, it took me a long time to really understand being a voice. And I said it in one of these interviews that, you know, sometimes you need something as detriment as a moment of clarity to understand the power of your voice. And for me, it was when I battled cancer. And then after that, when I went to Standing Rock, it all presented itself on how to be an advocate, how to champion the idea of identity. And so that's why it was a natural, innate thing for me to write a kid's book about identity so that we can start with the seven generations, so we can start with the youth and empower and embrace the empowerment and appreciate and impact and move in the direction of inspiring the youth.
Oh man, that's so that's cool. You know, starting out with the kids, man, you know, start when they're young and empower them and get them to celebrate who they are. That's so awesome.
Yeah, sure. Yep.
What would you say to someone who is, you know, struggling with alcohol or addiction?
I would just let you know, like you said earlier, you're not alone. That's a common theme with trauma. And addiction being trauma, it being a biological, psychological thing that people deal with, because you're dealing with chemical substance abuse being pumped into your body. You're dealing with alcoholism, you know, changing your mood and giving you these chemical imbalances. So I feel for you. I empathize with that because I understand from both perspectives, the addiction, the cancer, the chemo, all that stuff. It all goes hand in hand. So first of all, you're not alone. Second, you know, please get a support system to be able to help you along this journey, because support system really go a long way, man. Like if I didn't have my wife and my kids and my group to be able to help champion the idea of community and wanting to overcome that and be kind of like a team player. Because you don't want to mess up the team. It's like, I didn't want to be the guy, the drunk drug addict from the Black Eyed Peas. Like, I didn't want to go out like that, bro. I was like, no, I need a support system. I need my team to be there for me because I need as much help, all hands on deck, because this is a serious issue. So find a support system. You're not alone. You know, there's organizations and hotlines that you can be a part of. There's ways to get help. And do it in a way where, you know, some places are just, they just do it pro bono and they just provide a service to help others.
Man, Taboo, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing. Much love.
Thank you, brother. Have a good day. All right. Peace.
Well, that's all for today's show. I hope you, the listeners, found some inspiration, strength, and hope. Listen next week when I have another strong, courageous person on who's walking with us on this healing journey. This program is available as a podcast. You can hear this and many more episodes wherever you listen to podcasts or at anonymouseskimo.com. Join in the Anonymous Eskimo Project, Saturdays at 3 p.m., Sundays at 8 p.m. on KSKO, serving the western interior of Alaska for more than four decades. I'm your host, Ralph Sara. Biura!
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.